You know, machine vision is not what a lot of people think it is today. Machine vision has been around for many, many years. The folks who are, let's say, new to the industry maybe don't have a perspective on what machine vision is, what it does, and some of the differences between traditional application-based, automation-based machine vision relative to computer vision and deep learning. And I enjoy talking about these topics. I hope that as we talk today, Jim, that we get some information that's going to help people understand machine vision, understand how they're going to be able to use it best for their applications, and learn to differentiate what will be useful in their automated applications.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to the Robot Industry Podcast. I'm glad you're here, and thank you for subscribing. My name is Jim Beretta, and I'm your host. And it's my pleasure to have David Decco with me today. David Decco is a globally recognized expert in the integration of machine vision, robotics, and industrial automation technologies. He is the principal vision systems architect for Integro Technologies Corp, where he performs application, evaluation, and design of complex automated imaging solutions for inspection, metrology, and robot guidance. Prior to his position at Integro, he was staff engineer for Intelligent Robotics Machine Vision at FANUC, and earlier was the founder, owner, and principal engineer for two successful systems integration firms. His career in machine vision and industrial automation spans more than 35 years. David is the recipient of the AIA's Automated Imaging Achievement Award, honoring industry leaders for outstanding career contributions in industrial and or scientific imaging. He's a member of the Association for Advancing Automation's Imaging Technology Strategy Board and is a contributing editor for Vision Systems Design Magazine and Technical Advisory Board member with Society Vision Limited. As a key educator within the industry, David has partnered in the training of hundreds of engineers as an instructor with the A3 Certified Vision Professional Program. He's also well known for his frequent informative technical articles, papers, webinars, and conference sessions and classes covering a wide range of technical topics, including machine vision and enabling technologies in industrial automation. So that's a mouthful, David, and welcome to the podcast.
Thanks very much, Jim. It's a pleasure to be here with you.
Oh, I'm excited. I'm glad that you joined us. We both do webinars for the A3, so it's kind of fun to have us both on a podcast together.
Exactly.
Hey, can you tell our audience just a little bit about Integro Technologies and what you do there?
Yes. Integro is a large machine vision systems integrator. We specialize exclusively in solutions that involve machine vision for a variety of tasks, whether it be inspection, metrology, robotic guidance. And my job is to look at all of the systems that come, or all of the system requests that come in, and evaluate what the actual needs of the application are, and then develop the architecture of both the imaging, software solution, and the automation that's going to make those systems the most successful and meet the customer's needs. And we get a wide variety of applications, and that's really what makes what has always made the job of machine vision fun, is the diversity of what you work with.
And of course, I come from a big robot integrator as well, and we kind of laughed in our warm-up call about you're getting the really hard jobs. Like, the easy jobs don't come to you, which would be nice, but you get the challenging stuff, which, like you say, makes it very technically fun and interesting.
Absolutely. And I think that I can safely say over my career, I can't think of any particular application base or market application base that I haven't had at least a chance and the pleasure of touching and making some difference in that particular application use case.
So I wanted to ask, kind of from your global perspective, what's happening in automated machine vision?
Well, I think that the bottom line is that machine vision is growing, or let's say continuing to grow, kind of as it has been if you look at a statistical regression line ever since literally the mid-70s in industrial automation. Machine vision is just a fantastic enabling technology for a whole lot of technology, other technologies within the automation realm. And we continue to see more rapid advances in components, which in turn drive advances in new and pretty exciting applications. Certainly in really the last 10 or 12 years, I even think I see continued or increased acceptance within the marketplace of machine vision as a technology, the understanding of how it benefits Industry 4.0 and smart manufacturing and delivers data to the AI that's become more prevalent in processing and understanding what's going on in a manufacturing process. I think the other thing on, if I were to look at something that is becoming a somewhat of an obstacle in my mind, it's the buzz and hype surrounding some of the new technologies, and we want to be sure that that doesn't dilute the understanding of the end user and the people who work with the people who are going to use these systems, doesn't dilute their understanding of what machine vision really can do for them, with or without all of the new trending technologies.
And you and I are old enough to understand, and I love your analogy about the buzz and the hype of the new tech, when machine vision was early, and sometimes it would go in, and because of lighting or because of technical resource, they'd end up turning it off because it just wasn't robust enough. And we've got the robustness, and we've got that acceptance. I think those are really really good things for the industry.
One of the, I think that's a incredible statement, a very important statement, and one of the things you hear in the marketplace today is, we have to incorporate this brand new technology. We can just pick any name you want to pick, but we have to incorporate this technology. And I've actually heard people say this because most machine vision systems in the marketplace are now turned off because they don't work. And really, the machine vision marketplace globally is what, $13 to $14 billion global marketplace, depending on who you talk to. And I guarantee you it's not that size of a marketplace if all of these systems are being turned off. And I assure all of the end users out there that machine vision systems are not being turned off. Does it ever happen? Yes. Why does it happen? Usually because of poor specification and poor design, which is one of my key jobs and one of my key interests. Machine vision is an extremely valuable technology. I'll give you one more story related to that. I was on an expert panel a little while back, and one of the panel members, coming from the AI environment, was very, very excited about a brand new application that was being done for inspecting French fries. For inspecting French fries in the food industry. And I was just internally laughing so hard. French fry inspection was one of the first applications that was possible or that was implemented in an industrial setting in machine vision back in about 1979, 1980. And I've actually done it myself and seen those applications back when I started in 83. So it's for those of you who've been in the industry about 10 or 12 years, just remember there's a many decades that have gone before with a very successful machine vision.
And what's old is new again, or what's new is old again. I don't know. It's kind of funny. So let's talk a little bit about hardware, because I think that's kind of what we're talking about. So we've got software. If we're talking about hardware, we've got lenses, we've got lighting, we've got speed. What are some of the things that you're seeing in the hardware, and are you getting excited about this?
Yeah, there's no doubt that the component advances are awesome. It almost seems to me like they have ramped up the scale of advances in the last 10 to 15 years. Not that hardware advances always didn't happen, but it seems that we're really seeing incredibly rapid advances and significant advances in all of these areas. Particularly speed of both processing and speed of imaging has enabled a lot of applications that, while you could do it before, made it it was more difficult, more costly. Higher speeds reduce camera count. They improve processing time and so on. So that's been a huge benefit in including the advances in resolution of the cameras. But lighting and lenses, there's a tangible acknowledgement nowadays of the need for competent illumination, competent optics for a machine vision application, and I can't agree with that more. We make the application more reliable by adding and by incorporating a competent and targeted illumination and optical components for the application. And so we see advances in resolution of optical resolution of lenses, advances in lens formats, and then all of the lighting changes of the availability of broader spectrum illumination, particularly the availability of illumination in non-visible wavelengths like near IR and shortwave IR. These are a great boon to machine vision. And I'll add, it really, in the end, makes the application less costly than it may have been before. We may have been able to accomplish some of these applications before, but they were more costly because the componentry and the difficulty of implementing the componentry was harder. And it's getting, there's cost to the components, but it's getting easier to implement. And that really, when you get right down to it, the cost of any system is in the engineering primarily, and a little bit less in the components.
So when you see an application come in, and we're going to talk about some use cases in a minute, where do you start? Do you start with the lens? Do you start with the lighting? Or do you start with the camera? Like, I'm just kind of curious.
Oh, this is one of my favorite topics, and you'll notice in my webcasts and other presentations, I get a little bit animated about this topic because it's what I do, but it's also what I truly believe is a path to success in machine vision, and you can extrapolate it to any high-tech integration task. And the actual starting point has nothing to do with the components. It has nothing to do with the technology. The actual starting point is to understand the application, understand what the process is, understand the needs of the application relative to the industrial process or the automated process, and really dig into that and get a good specification of what both the needs of the process and the needs of the customer are within that process, and ultimately, what is the outcome expected from adding this technology, adding this complex technology to your process? What outcome is going to be achieved? I had an example just recently where I went with a salesman to a customer, and the customer said, we want a camera that will guide this robot. Sure, fine, we can do that. But after walking through their automation process and understanding and starting to ask questions and really understanding what the needs of the process were, it turns out that they didn't need a camera to guide a robot. They needed a camera for several other things that were actually the root cause of their issue and going to be the root solution of their application. So it's a common thing. People don't spend enough time on that. Now, not to sidestep your question, if we get right down to it, the first thing in any application where we're addressing where we're using a camera is to understand what the field of view is technically, and then identify the magnification. From there, I can spec anything: a lens, a light, a camera. But once we understand that, that's a great starting point. As far as cameras, lenses, and lighting. It's funny, it's usually a kind of a combined process. The mind thinks about lens, light, camera all at once after having gathered the right specifications.
No, that's a great explanation. You probably have saved that customer or potential customer like thousands of dollars and lots of time by focusing in on what the actual use is of integrating vision technology.
Absolutely. And also making sure they don't turn it off, right?
Absolutely. What are some of those use cases or trends or maybe applications that you can talk about? Because we know there's lots you can't talk about.
Well, there are many. There's so many diverse use cases. And again, I mentioned I have the pleasure of working as an integrator for most of my career and being able to see just anything from inspecting food product to measuring missiles. So it's a very diverse automation environment that can use machine vision and can benefit from machine vision as a technology. Some of the most recent ones that I've been involved with, and being a technologist, let me approach the answer sort of from a technology point of view. Some of the most interesting recent ones that I've been involved with are those that have been enabled by some of the, let's say, trending technologies. And as I mentioned earlier, it's the advancement in components that continues to drive more and more, we'll call them trending applications. So it's the advancement of the components that are the drivers. One is in pharmaceutical industry, the ability of the hyperspectral cameras, particularly in shortwave SWIR, or shortwave infrared wavelengths, to differentiate the chemical compounds and even very closely similar chemical compounds in a pharmaceutical environment. And this has been, while hyperspectral is not new, this is the continued acceptance or the increased acceptance of these types of imaging systems is really making these applications more accessible. And that goes into the food industry as well. I'd add the advances in thermal imaging for me have been pretty exciting. In that we can do, again, not a new technology, but with new components, less expensive components, higher imaging rates, higher resolutions in that type of thermal imager. We can do things like see the foil underneath the caps of bottles in a pharma or a food environment. And see how that foil has been, see whether that foil has been successfully heat sealed to the cap, and a variety of other things. Of course, during the pandemic, we looked into thermal imaging for temperature analysis, automated temperature analysis of people's faces, and it was rather successful. Thank goodness that's over, but it was rather successful at the time. So those are a couple of the application bases I think are extremely interesting. The one thing I'd say about trending, though, in applications and trending in technology is I never want to leave the impression with the end users or with the those of you who are using the technology, I never want to leave the impression that you have to move towards the trending or pay attention to the trending technologies. Machine vision, as we have already talked about, is such a wonderful, mature technology that and so many things can be achieved with the 2D grayscale camera. And I wouldn't ever want anyone to hold out for being able to use a trending, quote unquote, trending technology when your application may be perfectly solvable with mature, commonplace machine vision, and if you need help, an integrator of course can help you with that. But we want to make sure that all applications are all possible applications are addressed. So.
Kind of the meat and potato stuff, right? And that KISS principle. If you just need something simple, absolutely, let's put something simple in there.
Indeed.
I have a question for you. When you're into the hyperspectral, so that really means stuff that we can't see with naked eyes, you're into infrared or near infrared. Is that different lenses, different cameras? Like, what does that look like?
Oh, it definitely is. But let me just for the sake of clarity, let me give a couple words about that technology. Again, I don't want to focus on any one technology, but it is an interesting one, and I think we see folks having new applications. Hyperspectral doesn't necessarily mean non-visible. A lot of hyperspectral analysis is done in the visible wavelengths. But also done in the IR, near IR, and SWIR wavelengths as well. The point of hyperspectral is that it's hyperspectral because it's able to collect very narrow spectral bandwidths of the scene that it's looking at any one moment. And because of those bandwidth, because of the number of bandwidth it's able to collect of the reflected light, it acts as a spatial spectrometer. In other words, a spectrometer that has spatial content. And so we end up seeing an image that is spatially correct, but anywhere in that image we can get the chemical or the material content of whatever's in that image, if it is something that can be analyzed using reflected light in wide wavelengths. So. But you make a very good point in that when we get into, particularly into SWIR wavelengths or long wave IR, as in thermal imaging, we need special lighting. We need special optics to be able to transmit the SWIR content, or the SWIR content, and even NIR is better with specialized optics. This is just another point that we made earlier, that the lens manufacturers are advancing these technologies by providing relatively accessible and relatively easy to find optics, and even lighting. For this type of imaging in the non-visible or in the hyperspectral non-visible range. We do a lot of imaging in non-visible, even if it isn't hyperspectral, and that's another good wide broad use case that where we can make a lot of inroads into helping people with applications.
David, I was going to ask you a little bit about packaging, and when I say packaging, I kind of mean like the camera packaging, the lens packaging. What are your end customers looking for, or are they, when it comes to the size, the weight, the cost of the hardware?
Well, size and weight, I think particularly camera and indeed the lighting manufacturers and lens manufacturers are doing the best job they can to keep the size and weight down. It is important, but there are just plain certain laws of physics that we have to accommodate, particularly in lenses, particularly in lights. The cameras are getting smaller and smaller, but the sensor size is fixed at certain physical limits relative to the resolution. And so in terms of size and weight, the components we have are excellent in the marketplace today, but always a consideration. I think that we can rely on the manufacturers to provide us with size and weight that is, again, within the physical limits of what's possible. So we do pay attention to that as we're doing the applications, particularly if we have automation where the camera is going to be moved or held by a robot and things like that. The cost is a very interesting point. I love the cost discussion. I alluded to this earlier. The cost of a system lies primarily in the cost to engineer the system. Engineers are much more expensive than cameras, believe me. And even if you're doing it in-house, even if you are not an integrator like we are, but if you're doing your own integration in-house, the cost for your engineering team to implement the correct, and let's make sure we use that term, the correct components for the application is often more expensive than the component. So that I think that's a consideration many people overlook when they're considering the return on investment for machine vision. They see a high price tag on a particular camera, and some of these specialized cameras are very expensive. But they don't understand that the engineering involved with implementing that is more costly usually than the component itself. The other aspect is cost is. It's not a matter of how much it costs. It's a matter of how much value it provides to you. While we might say, boy, I wish that that $25,000 thermal camera only cost $5,000, but probably the marketplace and pure technical reality is it's not going to come down to those kind of cost levels. But if we can as an industry make the case that that kind of an application has a tremendous return on investment, and usually it does. Then the cost is, somewhat of a real irrelevant discussion, except for the shock factor when people find out how much some advanced technologies actually do cost.
When you think about the applications, how can companies that are interested in doing something maybe unique in vision, how can they reduce their risk? Is it some kind of maybe engineered study that they can engage with an automation integrator?
Oh, yes. And risk is an important word in the automation of any technology, technology system, any automation system. And, of course, the goal of the – let's separate this from end user to integration partner. The goal of the end user is to mitigate their risk.
Right.
And the job of any integration partner is to take over that risk. And so I often say that the job of the integrator is, well, I like the phrase I like to use often is that we have to make it work. But really at the most lowest level commercially, the job is to take over the risk of that application for the customer. The end user certainly can do machine vision on their own. But even with a simple system, it may be of greater importance to the end user to mitigate their risk by engaging an integration partner who can take over that job. And then in terms of execution, yes, preliminary studies, preliminary feasibility studies, even online application studies to prove capability are very, very important. We do a lot of that up front, and that's really part of what I do in the whole scheme of things. And very often, at a certain level, what we provide is not charged for. We do it for free. We do a study, or we do an analysis, a functional specification, just as part of our normal process of analyzing the application. It protects us and the customer to know that we can do it. But for more advanced applications, particularly with new components or, let's say, in situations where we can't really predict what's going to happen in the production environment, certainly a feasibility study is a good way to quantify that what you think is going to be your proof of concept.
And I think it's a great approach because not only does it reduce risk for the customer, who maybe they thought it was going to be a $100,000 thing and it ends up being a $50,000 thing, it also reduces the risk for the integrator. They don't have to charge so much. They become more competitive. I think that investment, that adding more time into your automation journey is a really good idea. So, David, I want to switch the conversation a little bit and talk about something you mentioned earlier about artificial intelligence and about how AI is changing the software part of machine vision.
Yeah, great. AI, let me preface the answer and the discussion a little bit. We use the term AI, we throw it around a lot. And when it really comes down to it, AI doesn't mean much of anything technologically. I don't mean to be to nitpick, but being a technologist, I say, what is AI? The sheer fact of it is that in our marketplace today, particularly in machine vision, we're using the term AI to mean deep learning.
Right.
It doesn't necessarily have to be deep learning. There are a lot of other things going on in AI. If you're an aficionado of the technology, there's a lot of the concept. There's a lot of other things going on. But for our purposes, when we say AI, and I don't mean to correct the question, but when we say AI, we're really talking about deep learning. Now, and the bottom line is that deep learning, since it really emerged back in 2012, emerging in that 2012 to 2015 period and now more maturing, deep learning is an incredibly valuable tool for machine vision or computer vision. And there's yet another dichotomy of terms that we don't really know. People use them more or less interchangeably, but I'll stick with machine vision in the industrial sense. It's an incredible tool in machine vision in the industrial sense when it's applied correctly. Deep learning is not suitable for every application. It is primarily good in inspection applications where subjective analysis of the image or subjective decisions need to be made about the content of the image, particularly for defect detection or assembly verification, even OCR. And these are the things that deep learning is incredibly good at. In that context of being sure that we've specified it and implemented it correctly. One of the biggest problems of deep learning, one of the biggest, obstacles in the marketplace for deep learning is the fact that the outcome can't be predicted in advance.
Right.
And you hear this all the time. I'm not telling you anything new, but the reliability of a particular deep learning implementation is hugely dependent upon the data, and you can do a quick proof of concept with a few quickly gathered images, but that doesn't predict the final outcome, and it could be months, literally months, before you know the final outcome. Why? We're looking for defects in a production environment. How often do you really get defects? You don't get them all the time, and you need to have defects to train the models. And so we love deep learning in the appropriate environments and where the customer is well aware of the process of the deep learning task, which is to collect images, have experts train the models, reevaluate the models in terms of their capability and classification reliability, and then collect more data. A lot of people have resorted to tuning the models, getting a data scientist in to tune the models. I think the conventional wisdom right now, particularly as is being offered by some of the real experts in deep learning, is that it has to be data-centric, is that the data are the important part of the deep learning task. And really that's held up by some statistics. The statistics show that you can train models a lot and only gain a little bit of efficiency or a little bit better reliability. You can train data, however, better and better, and it results in a much better end result of the efficiency. I think the other thing I'd say about AI and machine vision is to remember that it's still machine vision. One of my other favorite statements is it's still machine vision. We still have to take an image. You may take your cell phone and hold it up in front of an object and move that cell phone around just until you get the perfect image, and then snap the image, and then take a few of those and do a proof of concept in deep learning. But the reality is, in the industrial environment, you don't get to hold a cell phone on the production line and move it around so that it sees every single thing that you want to see. And so the bottom line is imaging will still be an important part of the task in machine vision, even when we're using these very, very valuable tools of machine of deep learning. And so it becomes more of a hybrid solution. And that's what we've adopted here in Integro, is more of a hybrid solution to deep learning, where we involve the image acquisition and processing up front, and then turn it over to deep learning at the point where we have the suitable images and the data that are necessary to get the right models.
David, you must talk a lot about strategies for data, too, with all of your clients and customers and people in the industry about this thing that, especially those where we're collecting data and archiving data, and maybe it's a pharmaceutical application or it's a medical device or nuclear, somebody has to actually keep all this data. So, I'm kind of wondering if this should be a different maybe podcast session. but what are some of the things you're seeing in this data? It must be hugely important.
Well, that's a very interesting question, and as you say, it almost kind of diverges from machine vision as we talk about that, because and in particular, I have to say that some of the some of the deep learning companies are taking that direction as they talk about computer vision in industrial automation. It's not so much the fact that they are going to detect the defects. We'll leave that up to machine vision. But what advanced computer vision and really advanced deep learning can do is pull all of that stuff to the cloud, and we're talking tens of thousands or even hundreds and hundreds of thousands of images, and even information from other sensing devices, time-stamped, all coordinated pieces of data, and use that then to understand what's going on in the process. And I think this is a tremendous initiative. I personally don't get involved in that so much from the machine vision end. I think it's something that we are seeing in the industry. It, again, diverges from actual inspecting things to pulling those data into the cloud and working on that data to understand what's going on in the process. I think the companies that are doing that are very interesting. Of course, there's some big names in there, like Microsoft, Oracle, Intel, and so on. Just to name a few, but I think it's a very interesting side of our automation technology that's certainly enabled by machine vision, because we're gathering the images and we're effectively labeling those images by saying that's a good one, that's a bad one, and then they go up into the cloud that way and can be worked on.
David, this has been fun. Thank you very much for coming on. Have we forgotten to talk about anything that you'd like to address today?
No, I don't think so, Jim. You know me. I could probably talk about machine vision for the next 5 hours straight, and I thoroughly enjoy talking with you, as always. And thank you for this opportunity to share some of these great ideas.
David, if someone's listening and maybe wants to reach out, how best should they get in touch with you?
Please do contact me. I'm sincere about this. I love to talk to people about machine vision. You can ask me questions, and I will try to answer. I won't ignore your emails, but contact me at ddeco@integro-tech.com. Best way to get a quick access to me is just look me up on LinkedIn. It's LinkedIn in David Deco, all one word.
And DECHO is spelled DECHOW, just for those people who might not be able to find you.
Thank you, Jim. That's correct.
Our sponsor for this episode is Earhart Automation Systems. Earhart builds and commissions turnkey solutions for their customers worldwide. With over 80 years of precision manufacturing, they understand the complex world of robotics, automated manufacturing, and project management, delivering world-class custom automation on time and on budget. Contact one of their sales engineers to see what Earhart can build for you. And Earhart is spelled E-H-R-H-A-R-D-T. I'd also like to thank our partner, A3, the Association for Advancing Automation. They're the leading trade association in the world for robotics, vision and imaging, motion control and motors, and industrial artificial intelligence technologies. Visit automate.org to learn more. And I'd like to thank our partner, Painted Robot. Painted Robot builds and integrates digital solutions. They are a web development firm that offers SEO and social marketing and can set up and connect CRM and other ERP tools to unify marketing, sales, and operations. And they're at paintedrobot.com. And if you'd like to get in touch with us at the Robot Industry Podcast, and by us, I mean me, Jim Beretta, you can find me on LinkedIn. We'll see you next time. Thanks for listening. Be safe out there. Today's podcast was produced by Customer Traction Industrial Marketing, and I'd like to thank my nephew Chris Gray for the music, Chris Colvin for audio production, my partner Janet, our partners A3 and Painted Robot, and our sponsor, Earhart Automation Systems.